Welcome back to our lesson on Pope Francis and Rosmini. With this sixth lesson on these themes, we approach the second theme, faith and reason. While in the first part we analyzed some elements of the social ethical thought of Pope Francis, and we saw that with the thought of Antonio Rosmini we can explain some elements of its pontificate, which is only several months old, in a more deeper way, and we can understand some elements of his pontificate not as, let's say, some spontaneous or some non-thought elements, but that it has a deeper, that it has a deeper mission and a deeper thought on it, that Pope Francis has a vision for the Church and for Christianity, for the relationship between Christianity and society, which is then determining all his actions and all his speeches, all his sentences, which seem to us spontaneous, which seem to us that they come him in mind in a certain moment. But we have seen that we can speak about and we can think that Pope Francis has a deeper concept for his pontificate, and he has a plan, a project for it. Now, we have also this second theme, and the second theme is based, first of all, on the encyclical that Pope Francis published. Pope Francis, as we know, published the encyclical Lumen Fidei, which was written by Benedict XVI. But Benedict XVI didn't publish it anymore before his resigning, and he gave it to Pope Francis to publish it. Pope Francis did not publish an encyclical which was simply written by another pope, putting his name at the end of the encyclical. But I think that he understands, that he underlines, that he strengthens, that he thinks that all what is written in the Lumen Fidei is also his thought, that he can divide in other, that he can in other words fully affirm all the things written in the Lumen Fidei by Benedict XVI. And I think we can say something more. I think we can say that some aspects of the relationship between faith and reason, just individuated by Benedict XVI, are reflected in a more deeper sense even by Pope Francis. That Pope Francis is radicalizing some elements of the model Benedict XVI had. Benedict XVI explained his model in some former encyclicals, in many, many writings, in many books, in many interviews, in the discussion he had with Habermas and in other occasions. And I think that some aspects we find even strengthened, we find even more deeper expressed, we find even more underlined, radicalized in Pope Francis. And one of these aspects is the relationship between two lights. We can find the metaphor of the two lights. We can find the metaphor of the light of reason and the light of faith also in Pope Benedict. It was a central theme of Pope Benedict, of the Augustinism of Pope Benedict. There is no doubt about it. But for Pope Francis, for Pope Benedict, excuse me, the light of faith had always a function to control light of reason, to fulfill light of reason. Light of faith had the function to clear light of reason, to bring the light of reason to its own. And I think regarding to this organization of the relationship between both, regarding to this Augustinian model to think about the relationship between faith and reason, Pope Francis is strengthening more the aspect of the light of reason. He is valorizing more the authenticity, more the originality and the proper rights of every light of reason. Of the light of reason not only of every Christian, but of the light of reason of every person. And therefore, the dimension of dialogue is such central. And therefore, the dimension of dialogue is such a main theme of all of the thinking and of all of which of what Pope Francis was saying till now. And so I think he is really underlining a more Thomistic sense of the light of reason. A more Thomistic sense of the light of reason, but which has no, I think, Thomistic consequences for the relationship between the light of reason and the light of faith. Because as already Pope Benedict criticized relatively Thomistic determination of relationship between light of reason and light of faith as a more rationalistic imposition of this relationship, as a formal determination of this relationship, as a formal imposition of the relationship between the contingents and the absolute, between mankind and God, between the Christians and the Creator. And I think also for Pope Francis, a more Thomistic determination of relationship, it's too less, it's too formal, it's too rational. I think that Pope Francis has an idea to underlining on the one hand the myrrh and all the rights, the authenticity, the originality of light of reason, but on the other hand, not to relativize the light of faith, which was the fear of Pope Benedict, not to formalize the relationship, which would be a more Thomistic model, but to deepen even anymore, the relationship of the person of every Christian to his God. And this God, which is contemporarily the personal God, the near God, but also the absolute one, also the absolute God which is beyond everything, also the God which cannot be instrumentalized, which cannot be called into its responsibility by man to justify human reason, or to formalize, or to be put in a formal relationship, in a formalized relationship between man and God. God, because of the fact that he is a personal and a free God, is infinitely above of all. And I think in this sense he is really Jesuit, and he really lives and wants to give to the Church and to the mission of Church this which is the motto of the Jesuits, and was the motto of the Jesuits from the very beginning on. Because in the interview with the Civiltà Cattolica on August the 19th, Pope Francis said to his interviewer, the Jesuit Spadaro, quoting the saying that describes the vision of Saint Ignatius, and quotes, "Non coercere a maximo, sed continere a minimo divinum est." Not to be limited by the greatest, and yet to be contained in the tiniest. This is the divine. To be greater than the greatest, not to be put into measuring, into the measure, and even if it would be the measure of the greatest. Neither the measure of the greatest, which is a measure of human reason, can put a limit to God, to the absolute. The absolute is above it. And because of the fact that it is above it, it is the nearest. It is in all, it is in the tiniest, it is contained in the tiniest. It is the nearest of all men, it is the forgiving God, it is the God which is more closer to human beings than every metaphysician God, and which could be also defined in the Thomistic tradition, can be defined. In this sense, I think the idea of the absolute is a modern idea. I don't think that which the categories of Augustinism or Thomism we can describe and we can define the idea that Pope Francis has of the absolute. The absolute in this sense is the absolute which is present, yes, in its image, which is present in every man, which is the image of God, which is present in every knowledge, which is the image of God. But being present does not mean to be only immanent. In this presence, he is in his presence, in this being included in the tiniest, in this he is infinitively above of all. He is infinitively above of all. And in a certain sense, we can try to think it, but to think it only in a rational sense, knowing that in the moment we are thinking it in a rational sense, we are rationally images of God, but God in this moment is every time above. But this means, on the other hand, that this rationality is not a minus. It is not a less form of the absolute. The absolute is not in the knowledge, is not in the formal definition of relationship between the two lights. The absolute is not the one which is in the function to clean, to bring reason to its fulfillment, to widen reason. No, the absolute in a rational sense is in the reason. But because of the fact that in a rational sense it is in the reason, it is always above. Because in its inner life it is personality and its freedom. It is the absolute freedom. But this means that in rationality, in self-consciousness which cannot be thought only as a rational self-consciousness, it is also a lived self-consciousness, it is a real self-consciousness for Pope Francis. Human being is self-conscious not only in a rational sense, not only in a self-reflecting sense. It is self-consciousness also in its actions. It is self-consciousness in its spiritual, in its sentimental, in its intellectual life. We thought about the diverse dimensions of poverty and that the diverse dimensions of poverty reveal what is the real human being, which brings human being to its authenticity, to its self-reflectiousness. And in this sense, we can say that more human being comes to itself, more human being gets divine, and more that the divine is included in the tiniest of this human being, more the divine is absolute and it is transcendent. And that this dialectic definition, this is a dialectic definition of the relationship between the finite and the absolute. This is not a Thomistic nor an Augustinian determination of relationship. This is a dialectic one. And this dialectic one is possible only in modernity. It is possible only with Fichte and Hegel. Only the problem that Fichte and Hegel reduced this dialectic to a rationalistic dialectic, and Pope Francis would be contrarious, because the dialectic is first of all a spiritual dialectic. But for Fichte and Hegel is a rational dialectic, and even if it is a rational dialectic for those, we can learn from them. We can learn from them at least a rational and formal way of defining relationship between the finite and the absolute. Being cautious that this definition of relationship is not the full definition of relationship that Catholics or that Pope Francis would formulate or would give. No. But it can help us to understand it. And it can be the beginning of a reflection, which then has to be integrated with other elements, with the elements of spirituality, with the elements of liberty, with the elements of charity, and so on. But this dimension we have, in a certain sense, formulated not only, but in a work which wrote Fichte in his late thinking, and it is called The Way Towards Blessed Life. And in The Way Towards Blessed Life, Fichte is referring to the Gospel of John. And in the Gospel of John begins saying, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was in God, and God was the Word." So that the absolute life of God is reflected life. A reflected life, God is revealing himself in his reflection, in an absolute knowledge, which is Logos, which is Logos and which is incarnated as Logos. And God, which is the absolute life in reflection, incarnated in the Logos, it's always above. Nevertheless, it's always above of all the possibilities of us to determine any knowledge which remains in the opposition of subjective and objective. God is above of it. But in the self-conscious life, which comes over too of the contradiction of subjective and objective, which finds a synthesis of subjective and objective in the absolute consciousness life, which therefore becomes image of God, Christians find a way to divine life. This divine life for Fichte is conscious life. This divine life for the idealists has always to do only with our consciousness. For Pope Francis, we have to put on this point not only the dimensions of consciousness, but the dimensions of consciousness life in all its dimensions, in the dimensions of material help, of material self-understanding, of sentimental self-understanding, in the intellectual dimensions, which we already mentioned, and in its spiritual dimensions. According to Fichte, in its work, The Way Towards Blessed Life, the knowledge and love of God is declared to be the end of life. God is the all. The world of independent objects is the result of reflection or of self-consciousness, by which the infinite unity is broken up. The other way round, in our knowing the objects, in our constituted knowledge, it is the spirit, it is the intellect, which is breaking up the absolute unity. And breaking up the absolute unity, it is knowing in the contraposition between subjective and objective. But this does not break up God in itself, because God is over and above the distinctions. Man's knowledge is a reflect or a picture of the infinite essence. And I think that the conceptions and the thinkings of Fichte and Hegel, which has without any doubt their problematic aspects, and the Catholic thinker who saw the problematic aspects, which are first of all immanentistic ones, because the absolute transcendence of God, which is the absolute transcendence to which we have only a way to access through the image which is the infinite knowledge, reduces in the end every possibility to have access to the infinite only through knowledge. So it becomes, in a Catholic view, a certain immanentism, and not a certain immanentism. We can say it becomes a radical immanentism. A radical immanentism which is not ignorant of the dimension of the absolute, which is not ignorant of the relationship between the finite and the absolute, between the finite knowledge and the access to the absolute, but which reduces the absolute as the dimension which is reflected in the absolute knowledge, which is then on the ground of every knowledge. This is for Pope Francis and for a Catholic view reductive. This is reductive because it is not affirming a real divine reality. A real divine reality, which would mean that God is not only absolute knowledge, but God is a real being, which would imply an ontology, which would imply an ontologist metaphysics, and not only a metaphysics of consciousness. And this metaphysics of consciousness has to be opened without any doubt to the dimensions of consciousness and liberty, to the dimensions of subjectivity and subjective being, which is pronouncing I, myself, but which cannot be reduced to it. Because affirming the transcendence of God does mean, constitutively, affirming the real being of the Absolute, the real being of the Absolute, not only, or meaning would say, its ideal being. Affirming the real being of God is affirming transcendence, which is putting a lot of theoretical problems, but which is a basic of Christianism, of Christianity, which is a basic of Christian life, because Christian life is not resolving in a self-consciousness life, because the Christian spirituality is more than that. And therefore, Pope Francis is talking about two lights. In Fichte, in the end, we have only one light. We don't have two lights. And in Pope Francis and in Rosmini, we have two lights. Two lights which are not related, and I said it, in an Augustinian or in a Thomistic way, but which is inspired of the modern definition about it. The modern definition about it, which was already anticipated by the coincidentia oppositorum of Cusanus, and which we have in Ignatius' non coaceria maximo sed continueria minimo divinum est. And this relationship between two lights now opens for Pope Francis the possibility to begin a new dialogue with modernity, to begin a new dialogue with the world, to begin a new dialogue with society, to begin a new dialogue even with non-believers. So if we take Pope Francis in all of the seriousness we can do, then his dialogue with the non-believers, so much criticized now by many, many, many theologians, by many thinkers, by many journalists who are criticizing now the Pope. I don't want to mention any names, but I think we all know some of these names, and who accuse the Pope, and to think that the Christianity, the idea of Christianity of this Pope, is a weak idea. But they don't even know what it is mean in this way, beginning from the saying of Ignatius and in the modern reflection, what the reflection on the Absolute means. And that now the dialogue, even with the non-believers, it is not a sign of weakness, but it is a sign that Pope Francis has a strong idea of the Absolute. And that this strong idea of the Absolute now comes out, as I said, in the metaphor of the two lights. And therefore we deal with a radicalization of the determination of relationship of two lights by Pope Benedict XVI. And I want to read now, to finish this lesson, some sentences from his letter to non-believers, to Eugenius Calfari, founder of the Repubblica on September the 4th. And Pope Francis said, throughout the centuries of modernity, a paradox was witnessed. The Christian faith, whose newness and influence on humanity were expressed by the symbol of light, has been often characterized as the darkness of superstition in opposition to the light of reason. Thus, between the Church and Christian-inspired culture on the one hand, and modern culture shaped by the Enlightenment on the other, a point was reached where there was no longer any dialogue. The time now finally come, ushered in by the Second Vatican Council, for a dialogue that is open and free of preconceptions, and which reopens the doors to a responsible and fruitful encounter. So we have some very important elements in these quotations. First of all, the element that in modernity, in Enlightenment, faith was not recognized as a light. The light was the light of reason. Faith, which was based on authority, on tradition, on not self-consciousness, on the opposite of reflection and of critical spirit, was not recognized as a light. It was darkness, it was superstition. And also we have to add that from the point of view of the faith, the attack of reason even was a sign of darkness. Because if faith is the real light, reason, which is rebelling against the real light of faith, it is in a certain sense, switching off his own light. Reason, it's turning off, is switching off itself as a light. And therefore, a new dialogue is only possible if, from the point of view of the faith, we recognize the dimension that also reason is an authentic light. It is not a light which has to be corrected or cleaned or fulfilled by light of reason. In the first matter, it is an authentic light. More that the light of reason is recognized as authentic light, the more possible is a dialogue. But also from the part of reason, we have to have recognition that also light of faith can be a light, that it is not a darkness, because and this is only possible if reason recognizes that even as reason, it cannot be fully and completely rationalized, that all of its affirmations, have always a dimension, which is a dimension, let's say, of faith in a very large definition. And this is not a faith in an existential sense. It is not a faith as an affirmation of something that I would affirm from the bottom, from the ground of my existence, or that I would affirm because I wanted to affirm, or that I affirm for affirming, or that I believe for believing. No, the dimension, let's say, of a large dimension of that what can be the faith in order to reason, it is the dimension of its absoluteness, that also reason, if it is fully reason, cannot affirm, let's say, the horizon of itself. It cannot affirm its own horizon. Because it is absolute, because it's the absoluteness that we saw in Fichte. It is the absoluteness of the absolute knowledge. And the absoluteness of absolute knowledge cannot be itself rationally affirmed. It's the horizon of all. It can be affirmed only, not rationally, but only by affirmation, by positive affirmation. Or we can also say by intuition. The horizon is a matter of intuition. It is a matter of if we wanted to define it in a large way, of faith. And so we have the relationship between faith and reason, between the two lights, in a certain sense, naturally. Because, on the one hand, reason is affirmed fully by reason itself, but, because I am affirming reason as fully light, reason discovers the absolute dimension of itself, discovers its dimension of faith. So it cannot say anymore that faith is darkness. And faith, on the other side, as we said, recognizes that also reason is, in a certain sense, authentic, it is original, it is a light. And this light, which is not anymore against faith, can be fully recognized by faith itself. And so we have now the presuppositions, we have the possibilities for a new dialogue. For a new dialogue which is possible for Christians from the Second Vatican Council on, because it's the Second Vatican Council, the authenticity of human reason was fully recognized as a personal reason, and therefore in its absolute dimension. Neoscholasticism affirmed the authenticity of natural reason, affirmed the originality of natural reason, and faith was on a second level, which doesn't intervene into the level of natural reason. But even if faith could not intervene in the dimension of reason for neo-scholasticism, it thought about natural reason as a limited one. And it did not affirm natural reason in its unity and totality, in its absoluteness as reason, in its possibility to be as absolute knowledge in a certain sense, in a limited sense, in an abstract sense. Not in a full sense, but in an abstract sense, as he said, Fichte, image of God. But this abstract sense is not a summary of sentences. It is not a rationalistic knowledge. It is the horizon. It is that absolute knowledge which is above the distinction about subjective and objective. And in these terms, now, we have defined how for Pope Francis we have a positive determination of relationship and we have the positive possibility of dialogue. Thank you for the audience and till the next time.